You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I vividly remember when Alyssa, our guest today, her first book came out. It's called Tiny Humans, Big Emotions. It was sent to my mom and she quickly sent it right to me to read because I had two baby girls at the time. And now with both of my girls being a little bit older, this book has come in handy on a whole other level. And Alyssa has a new book coming out called Big Kids, Bigger Feelings. So I'm excited to read that and chat with her all about regulation, temper tantrums, how to manage them, how to regulate our own emotions while also helping our child, and to just dive right into all things emotions. So here we go. Your first book, Tiny Humans, Big Emotions, came out in 2023. And it's just now, 2 years later.
It just hit the bestsellers list.
I mean, what do you attribute that to?
It like got in people's hands and literally people shared it. So it just, people were sharing it on TikTok and on Instagram and in their communities. And then we had schools doing bulk buys for teachers and it was serving them and they found it helpful, and literally like the village shared it, which feels pretty cool.
That's amazing. I love that it's getting that kind of attention. And also I find it fascinating that that's happening now. Do you feel like there's something going on in the world or the timing that makes it seem like a book and a subject matter that people are clinging on to more right now than when it came out?
I'm pretty nerdy. I love to talk about neuroscience, and a lot of our work really helps people understand how their child's unique nervous system works and that it's not one size fits all, and how your nervous system works. And I feel like there's been a shift culturally where people are more open to that, of like talking about the nervous system. And if you have two kids, I mean, you know this, one thing you try with one kid isn't necessarily what's helpful with the other kid. And our books dive into the why behind that and how do you help the unique child in front of you. And I feel like there's been a cultural shift around neuroscience and talking about regulation and people realizing it's not always deep breaths or a hug and what can it look like for one kid versus another kid. And I think with that cultural shift, Tiny Humans just like hit. It speaks to that.
I mean, it definitely, for me personally, makes sense that it's something that is very relevant to my parenting phase right now. I was mentioning in the intro for this that when your book came out, you guys had sent a PR mailer to my mom. And that book quickly made its way to me with a post-it note on it that said, from my mother, you should read this. And then it was like, love, mommy. And I was like, oh, okay, well, let's dive into it. And at the time, I had a almost one-year-old and a little over 2.5-year-old. And I remember looking at the book and saying, oh, okay, I don't know if that's something that pertains to me right now, but I'll read it and I'll look into it. And now that I have a just turned 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm constantly drawing from certain tips and tricks and just thoughts that you shared in the book. But also, there is a time at this phase of parenting that I feel like you go back to that book more and more, because my youngest daughter just turned 3 and has quickly entered into like the three-nager phase, which totally. Feels like it just happens overnight when they turn three. And then my older daughter, who just turned 5, feels like she's coming out of that a little bit. But again, as you mentioned, they're so different. And what works for my older daughter does not work for my second daughter. And so I want to dive into that before we talk about your new book that's coming out. But just this idea of how we are focusing and understanding kids' emotions and our own emotions in real time and just overall as being something that is so unique to each person and each child is such a revolutionary concept that you bring to everyone's attention. Can we talk a little bit about how that even came to be and how that came to be your focus?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm one of 5 kids. And
There you go.
And I grew up in just a huge community. And my parents really parented us all the same. And my mom's one of 8. My dad's one of 6. Like, that's what they knew. And so for me, I feel like this interest really grew as I started to do my master's in early childhood and early childhood education. And I was teaching and realized that what I grew up experiencing wasn't serving all of the kids in my class. It served some of them, and some of them I could really support. And there were some that I was like, I'm doing the same thing for them and it's not working. It's like, what is this? And that led me into the area of like, not one size fits all. And so what does it look like to reach all kids? And I am a giant nerd and I love neuroscience. And so from there, it just spiraled as I started to dive into the world of like occupational therapy and understanding the nervous system. I found myself teaching at a childcare program in the Boston area where every head teacher had a master's in early ed, and it was really resource rich. And we were able to do research in conjunction with a university there. And a colleague of mine was like, I feel like we're doing something different. And as we started to video lesson each other and get to know, like, what were we doing different? It was really that we were focused on the adult first, that we were really helping adults, the co-teachers in our classroom or ourselves, understand our own nervous system and regulate and recognize, is this thing that's coming up for me in this moment something that I still believe, or is it something I learned in childhood that I don't want to pass on? And what do I do with that? And then ultimately, how do we respond to the tiny humans in front of us with intention? And I feel like there has been, with the rise of social media and social media parenting and all that jazz, just more discussion around this. There's more at your fingertips.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
With the whole part of it of who are we as parents, that is such a big part of all of this because so many of us were raised with stop crying, get it together, there's no crying allowed, a lot of that language, which I think so many of us grew up hearing, our parents grew up hearing that exact same language. So for the first time in all the generations of parenting, there's a difference with, okay, maybe some people are swinging the complete opposite way, and maybe some people are trying to find some sort of a middle ground. Because there's, as you mentioned, with social media, there's so much information that oftentimes I find overwhelming of how to parent, what not to do, how to go completely against how you were raised or parented. And then there's also some of us who think, okay, I like a lot of the things that my parents taught me or used when I was younger. And also I'd like to make some new changes or some new parts. What has been kind of the biggest feedback when it comes to the adults taking a moment and turning inward about what's coming up for them in their journey of parenting or just having experience with tiny humans having meltdowns?
I mean, the reality is it's hard, right? It's hard to turn inward. It's hard to be with somebody who's having a hard emotion. Seiji, my oldest, he's now 4.5, but he was like 2.5 at the time. And he was starting a new childcare program. And we were on the way there. I was driving him to school, maybe 2 weeks into school. And he didn't want to go. We're in the car. And he's like, Mom, I'm going to be at school and I'm going to feel sad and I'm going to be all alone. And in my head, I'm like, we don't need this. I can quit my job. Like, let's go home. I would love to avoid this sadness, right? It's so hard to let someone you love feel a hard emotion and be with them in it without trying to rescue them from it, which is what our parents and generations before were doing when they said, stop crying or you're fine. They were really saying, it's so hard to be with you when this emotion is so hard and so big. And I want it to go away. I want to save you from that because I want to save me from being in this with you. And instead of quitting my job and driving home, which was quite tempting in the moment, I said, totally, Sage, that makes a lot of sense. You're doing something new and you don't really know these people yet. They're awesome and you're safe. And it's okay to feel lonely when you're there or sad sometimes. I said, do you want to know something so cool about feelings? Remember yesterday when you were playing that game with Dada and you were on his shoulders and he was saying, where'd Sage go? And he was trying to find you and you were laughing and you were happy and you were having fun. And right now you're not happy. Right now you're not having fun. All of our feelings stay for a little bit of time and then they go away and we feel a new feeling. You might feel sad at school sometimes and you might feel lonely. And sadness won't stay for a long time. You'll feel something else soon. It's okay to feel sad. And the reality is, it's so hard to just be with someone who is feeling sad without trying to make that go away. So the biggest feedback we receive is, man, this is hard to do, especially if no one ever did it with you. And now you're trying to learn how to be with a hard emotion for the first time for yourself and allow your child to be with the hard emotion without just trying to make it go away. It's not like, oh yeah, this feels chill. There's never a moment where I'm sitting with my child when they're anxious or feeling sad or feeling frustrated. And I'm like, yeah, this is fine. I love this. It's not an enjoyable experience and it's an important one. And I think that's the tricky part is like, there isn't a way in which, I think some folks want this prescription of, if I say this way or we build these tools, then it will feel easier to be in a hard emotion. And the reality is, it is hard to feel hard things. It's hard to feel sad. It's hard to grieve. It's hard to feel anxious or mad or embarrassed or left out. And it's important to learn that when we try to escape those feelings, it just piles up or it's like quicksand and we get stuck in it. And so when we can learn to be with them, it actually moves them along faster.
It's such an interesting thing. I don't know if it's me because I'm the oldest in my family and I have a personality of, I just want to like fix everything and make everything better. So for me, this concept and learning about this concept a couple years ago was such an interesting, like a moment for me where I was like, ooh, this is going to be hard for me because I, like our parents' generation, you see your kid upset or your friend or your sibling or your parent, and you're like, what can I do to make this go away? Because I don't want them to feel pain. And it was actually with my sister, who's a year and a half younger than me, when my oldest daughter was having a meltdown when she was younger. And my mom was like, oh, stop crying. And my sister was like, don't say that to her. And my mom and I were both like, wait a minute, why? Where this is such a silly thing to be crying about. And she was like, you need to let her have these emotions. And so she, of course, gave us a whole education on it. And it's also in your book. But it feels so unnatural.
Totally, especially for an oldest. It feels so unnatural. Y'all are great fixers. Yeah. I'm number 4 of 5, so it's probably a little easier on my end.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
But no, it does feel unnatural because their nervous system's dysregulated. So if we get nerdy for a second, they are not in their full rational brain. They're firing some adrenaline or cortisol, that fight, flight, freeze, fawn hormone. And our nervous systems communicate just in the same way that recently Mila, my daughter, had just like a case of the giggles. She's a year and a half old. And it's just like that delicious toddler, like full deep belly laugh. And it's contagious. You can't help but like smile or laugh when you hear it. But the same thing happens with the heart emotions, where they're contagious too. And so when your child is crying or they start to yell about the color cup they got or something that feels so silly and they're melting down about it, your nervous system responds to that and starts to also produce that adrenaline or that cortisol. And so the urge to stop their feeling is really the urge to stop your production of cortisol and adrenaline, which makes absolute sense that you're saying like, oh, yikes, this doesn't feel good for me. And that's why the adult part of this is so key, because when we can learn to recognize that in ourselves and build tools for regulating it, then we can be with them having a hard feeling without being consumed by their hard feeling. when Lauren, my co-author of Tiny Humans, and I researched the CEP method, collaborative emotion processing, that's what our work's based on, we found that it shifted the way that adults experience children's emotions. Our goal wasn't less sadness or less fear or less anger, fewer hard emotions. What was so cool was that adults were able to be with their kids or with their kids in their classroom or as grandparents or as parents and allow the kids to feel something hard without trying to make it go away and without the adult feeling that panic throughout the whole thing of like, this needs to go away. And that for me is so rad because then we can respond with intention, we can be with people's emotions and not feel overwhelmed by their hard stuff.
That was also such a big transformative moment for me in parenthood was kind of like this idea of you don't have to rush your way through your child's emotions or through meltdowns or parenting. I think just based on how we've viewed meltdowns or big feelings in the past is you want to just get through them. And this idea that you mentioned, the collaborative emotion processing angle that you talk about, but just that you can take your time in sitting in these emotions, not that it's like the most enjoyable time to sit through them, but that it really has a long-term benefit of then getting to a place where they're able to work through them faster on their own or even with you. I want to talk just about for parents who might have related to your example of a child getting the wrong color cup and having a meltdown. That similar things happen in my home all the time with my girls. When that type of a thing happens, your child gets the wrong color cup or the wrong stuffed animal that you brought in the car, there's a meltdown. It's a lot of big feelings. It's screaming, crying, throwing themselves on the floor, whatever it is. Let's walk through what, as a parent or a caregiver or the adult in this scenario, can do to help themselves regulate and then also walk their child through that.
Yeah. So first and foremost is really noticing for yourself, like that spike of adrenaline or cortisol. For me, I get like a little clammy usually. And I have this rush of like, I need to say something in the moment. Like it feels urgent. Now, when I notice that urgency, that for me is usually a like, ooh, pause. If it feels urgent, it usually isn't. Now, if your kid's like running into the street, I don't want you to be like, oh, let me pause and regulate before I pick them up, right? Yes, if there's actual danger, you got to respond to that urgency and pick them up. But our nervous system reacts, whether it's a meltdown over the wrong color cup or they're running into the street, the same way. And so we get to intercept that and say, oh, this isn't actually an emergency. Nobody's bleeding. Nobody's hurt. And I will say out loud to my child, wow, you really wanted a different color cup and I gave you the wrong color. Whoa. And I'm just saying, we call it sports casting, saying what we see. I'm just validating, man, this is what's going on here. And I am in that moment, it like gives me a beat to start to calm. And it reminds my brain with those words, like, this is an emergency. She got the wrong color cup. We're going to survive this one. If there's any safety stuff, I'm going to step in. Like if it's sibling stuff where somebody's hurting somebody else or they're going to throw something, we're always going to have boundaries around expression. So can't hurt yourself. You can't hurt somebody else. You can't hurt the things in our household. And I'll stop them from throwing, that sort of thing. And then I'm just going to let them know that I understand where they're coming from. I see you. Yeah, this is what happened. And sometimes for some kids, especially our big connection seekers, when you validate that for them, they immediately start to calm, where they feel seen and they're like, yes, you get it. Yeah, you gave me the wrong color cup. And it's not my job right now to decide, should they feel what they're feeling? They're already there. What my job is to let them know I understand what they're feeling. I'm not condoning behavior. I'm not being like, yeah, and you should be outraged at this atrocity of a purple cup and seven orange one. I'm just saying I get it. And then I'm going to say, oh man, do you feel ready to figure this out with me? And this will depend on their age in terms of what their verbal skills are. But if they are, say they're three, do you feel ready to figure this out with me? Or should we do some big jumps? Or do you need to yell so loud? Should we step outside and yell so loud and then we can figure it out? Or do you need to stomp? Right now, my daughter, she's 20 months and she's really in, she's like hitting the floor. And she'll go, mad. And then she'll hit the floor. It's precious. It's like hard not to laugh at because it's so cute. But that for her is like, I need to get this out. In the same way that if I'm like annoyed with my husband and my version of that is usually like sarcastic and snippy and rude. If somebody came in and was like, Alyssa, we're going to calmly talk to Zach right now and figure this out together. I'm like, yeah, right. Like I need to do something with what I'm feeling first. And so that's what we're giving them an opportunity to do is move that cortisol and adrenaline a little bit. And we have a million different examples in both tiny humans and in big kids, because it'll depend on who your child is as to what the right coping strategy is for them. It's not one size fits all. And then once we can start to get to a place where they're able to access that problem solving and conflict resolution, then we can walk them through it like, oh man, you really wanted that purple cup instead of the orange cup. I want to help you figure this out. And if it's something where it's, we can do a swap, cool. If it's not, maybe the orange cup's in the dishwasher and the dishwasher's running. Oh man, it's not available. What do you think we should do? It's in the dishwasher right now and it's not clean. And when they are regulated, if they've had that opportunity to express and they feel like you get it and you're in it with them, they're awesome problem solvers. If they're like, no, I need it, they're not ready for problem solving. We're going to pull back. We're going to give them a little more time to feel, and we're going to stay in that like validation coping space a little longer. Like, yes, you really wanted that one. Gosh, you were really hoping you'd have the orange one. And just letting that be true without solving it. And being in it with them, giving some more time. We had one little girl in, I wrote about her in Tiny Humans, who was yelling, no calm, mama. And she was saying like, don't rush me to calm. I'm not ready yet. I need more time to feel. And when we keep coming back to problem solving and we see if they're ready, if they're not ready, we just pull back and give them more time. The annoying part about emotions is that it's not like a checklist. It's not like I allowed them to feel, check, I validated, check, we offered coping, check, let's move on. And that's what we want. We're like, come on, we've already done this. Let's keep it moving. And they're like, no, I just need some time to feel disappointed or frustrated. And when we can allow them that time, it is so rad in their ability to then move through those steps often faster as they continue to practice it. They learn that it's okay for them to just feel disappointed for a little bit, and that their disappointment doesn't mean the boundary changes. That you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I have to figure this out and get that orange cup out of the dishwasher and I'll hand wash it and we'll make sure that this goes away. And as they learn that, yeah, that's not necessarily how this is going to go, that I might really not get the orange cup right now. They learn that, okay, I'm just going to move through my feelings and we'll figure something else out, or we'll figure out a plan, but it might not be right now.
It's such a interesting concept also to think, oh, don't go into the dishwasher and then hurry up and hand wash the orange cup to just fix it. Because of course, that's
so tempting.
It would be a temporary, yeah, fix. It's also not helping them teach anything or learn anything for themselves for future meltdowns. I also notice, and I'm sure this comes up in your experience of just doing what you do, but also talking about your book and having experiences with different families, that parents oftentimes have different responses or reactions to walking through the concept that you just walked through of allowing a child to have big feelings, especially each parent comes into their parenting journey with their own unique experiences, having been raised a certain way, parented a certain way. And then that shows up when your child is having a meltdown or an experience. And I noticed that with Chris and I, we have different experiences of how we were raised. And certain things come up for each of us when our daughter has a meltdown about something, when our daughters are arguing with each other, or they want the same doll. How has that been, or how have you tackled that subject for parents that are confronted with that for the first time?
I mean, this is every household I've ever encountered that has two parents, right? That like very rarely do we come to adulthood, and if we're co-parenting with somebody else, have the exact same, like, yep, we feel the same about all the things. And so first knowing that you're not alone in this, that your household's not like, oh my gosh, we're failing and all these other parents are on the same page all the time, that's not necessarily true. And My favorite tool for this is curiosity. That if I can enter into a space, if it's something that's not like deep in my values of like, oh, I really feel important about how this is responded to in the moment, we generally will let the other, whoever's responding, respond. And then later, Zach and I will debrief. We'll be like, hey, earlier when this came up, tell me more about what you were going for with your response or what your goals were with your response. I felt like I would have done it differently. And I want to chat about like what's happening here. And just having that open conversation, I'm not here to convince you of my side. I'm saying like, this felt different for me. And I'm curious. I want to learn more about what was coming up for you. And in our household, sometimes Zach will be like, oh yeah, I had no idea. I was just like flying by the seat of my pants. This felt really annoying. He's also an only child and I'm one of five. And so we bring a lot of different things to the, yeah, it's bonkers. On our first date, I was like, oh, I don't date only children. And turns out I marry them. But we were raised in such different households with that alone of like the sibling dynamics piece and understanding where the other one's coming from there, that this comes up, I feel like, all the time. And most of the time, I think it's not an emergency that we step in and do it the way that maybe we want to do it instead of the way our partner's doing it. What's super rad about being in relationship with humans is that we get a million other chances. We get the opportunity to go back and say, hey, earlier when you and your sister were arguing over that stuffed animal, I came in and I don't like how I responded, or I was feeling overwhelmed when I spoke to you. And I'm going to work on calming my body so that I can respond differently to you, or so that I can say it differently. And our partners have that opportunity to do that as well, where they can come in and say, hey, man, I'm sorry for the way that I responded. Or just kids give us 7 billion opportunities a day where they have hard emotions and we get to try again and get these do-overs of how we're going to respond. And we can try to do it differently next time if we want to. I think most of the time, my goal is not to change how my partner's responding, and instead to just get curious about like, what's coming up for him? What's he curious about here? What's he nervous about? And we might have different fears of like, oh, if I respond this way to Sage right now, this is what's going to happen. Or he's like, well, if Sage doesn't include Mila in this interaction, they're never going to be friends down the road. And I'm like, oh no, this is just part of being siblings.
Right.
They're going to love, hate all the time. There's going to be this back and forth. But because he doesn't have sibling experience, that's not a known for him. He doesn't know that, yes, sometimes you're going to be annoying to each other. And it's just part of the gig.
I also want to talk about, of course, your new book, Big Kids, Bigger Feelings, because that's, of course, for all of us who have been reading your first book, that's in our future. And what has been the big difference with what you're putting in this book versus what you're offering in your first book?
Yeah. So the biggest change in that elementary school range, which you're about to enter into here, is the social component of this, where all of a sudden, usually around 6, 7 years old, inclusion and belonging start to matter in a new way, where it's up until that point been largely within the household or within your family unit. And even if they have friends and they're doing play dates or they're going to childcare or preschool, all of a sudden around 6, they're like, oh, I need this pair of shoes, or I need this specific water bottle, or I want to be on this team. And we need to make sure that I have like this specific hair tie or hair clip, or I want to be invited to this birthday party. And when I'm not, I feel left out. Inclusion and belonging start to play a huge role in their identity, where they are really looking at, who am I in the world outside of my family, outside of my household? What am I interested in? Who do I like hanging out with? And it starts to really shape their social emotional development. We often talk about emotional development in these early years, but the social development starts to really blossom here. And it comes with, for a lot of us, a lot of feelings from our childhood and the feeling left out or not feeling included or not being invited to, and being mindful of that feeling for ourselves and that desire to make sure our kids included in everything and that they belong everywhere. And the reality is that, yeah, there are going to be kids that don't want to play with them, or spaces that they don't feel like they can be their whole selves in. And that's okay. That's a part of social development, that they're going to learn what it means to be a good friend and be in friendships where people are kind to you, and what it means to be in friendships when people are not kind to you all the time. And herein lies the like adult component again of, man, it's so hard to watch and not intervene and like call Sarah's mom and say like, oh, did you know the girls, this was happening, and let's help them figure this out and step in and like remove those obstacles can be so tempting in this time. And now we also are adding in things like media and tech, and we're looking at earlier hormonal changes, really starting to shift around like 8, 9 years old. After Tiny Humans published, we had so many people reach out and they're like, this is so helpful. Also, why is my 9-year-old a teenager? And we're like, yeah, let's move into big kids. All of a sudden, those hormones are really coming in hot. And so learning how do we navigate those body changes along with the like social changes plays a big role in the big kids.
What is the kind of age range that you're tackling in your new book?
Yeah, 5 to 12 is like the target range, really those elementary school years for most kids.
Oh my God, I cannot believe that that's something that
is on the horizon, Catherine.
Just when I feel like I have your first book down in a script in my head, I'm like, here we go. Well, I mean, it seems like you and I are on a similar wavelength with the books that you're putting out in the time frame that you're putting them out. So that I'm grateful for. And I'm really excited about your new book, because your first book was and continues to be such a big part of the language that I draw from, and also just like the mentality that I go into parenting in these moments that feel like fight or flight moments, that there's always a script or a routine that I can try to draw from in those moments that allow me to hopefully be a good parent in those moments. So I'm grateful for your first book. I'm excited for this book. And I'm also really excited to hear how this whole experience goes for you, because it's a whole new set of parenting experiences and journeys and age groups, and it's going to be exciting. So good luck with that journey. Wow.
Thank you. It's fun. It's fun. We do at Seed, the bulk of what we do at Seed is working in schools, childcare programs, daycares, and elementary middle schools. And so we've been working with kids this age for so long in school systems and working with their families and working with their teachers. And I'm so jazzed to get big kids out into the world, because we've seen like, where are the gaps in support and how can we help fill them? And so psyched to have a resource to share with folks. Thank you for bringing me on to chat about it.
Of course. Thank you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.